waiting on the chime. I'm waiting on the chime to go off when the clock strikes 10. Okay, board, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Shelley? I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this Tuesday, the 6th of November. Just the knowledge for the public, today is a very important day throughout America as the voting takes place to determine the future direction of the leadership of our country. Hopefully people are paying attention to also the federal, the state, and the local races as well. And particularly in Iowa, there's an important question regarding judicial retention and so forth. So we ask that the public really pay close attention and voice their concern and their preference in this upcoming election. And I think it's important for us to acknowledge the difficulty the people on the East Coast as a result of Hurricane Sandy will be facing as they try to go to the polls and cast their vote. And I'm sure that there will be long lines and tension that they will have to deal with, and hopefully that will have a smooth transition as well. So our thoughts are with all of those that will have challenges on this special day. So I will ask the audience to join the board with the Pledge of Allegiance as we honor our nation. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. And a reminder, if you do have a cell phone, if you could put it on silent or turn it off during the proceeding, since the board proceeding is, we have the audio recording. Okay, item number three is a public comment period. This is an opportunity where members of the audience may address the board concerning a topic on today's agenda. Is there anyone that will want to address the board regarding a topic on today's agenda at this time? Okay. All right. Seeing no one. Okay. We will move on to item number four. We're pulling at this time. The minutes are not ready for us, so there will be no action on item four. So we'll move on to item number five, consideration of personnel action.
Move approval. Second.
It's been moved and seconded the approval of personnel action. There are no further comments. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Personnel action is approved. Consideration of claims. Good week.
Yeah, I'll move it. Second.
It's been moved and seconded the approval of the claims. Hearing no further comment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Claims are approved. On the consent agenda, there is no additions this week. It seems like all items are good to go.
Move approval of the consent agenda.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded the approval of the consent agenda. Roll call. Toot.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton. Aye. Consent agenda is adopted. Okay, moving right along. The first of the public hearing items today is the consideration of Ordinance 1325, which is to authorize a tax increment revenue loan agreement and to enter into a tax increment revenue loan agreement in a principal amount not to exceed $3,185,000. Okay, and this has been brought before us in the past. Jessica, would you want to just come up and just quickly tell us where we are? Is there any additional information that we've received? This had been brought before us because of the publication need to. We didn't have the dollar amount in, so I didn't know if you had any other comments you want to make regarding what's before us today.
That's correct, Mr. Clinton. The reason for the reconvening of the public hearing in this matter is that the original legal notice on the original public hearing did not have the amount of the loan, which is required by state law. So that was republished. I do have copies of the publications that were circulated, and the amount is contained therein, as well as the necessary legal information. So we're ready to reconsider this amount. As you'll all remember, this amount is to cover the current TIF projects that have been approved already.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Assistant County Attorney at this point? Okay, with that, I will open the public hearing and ask if there is anyone that would like to speak to this item. Seeing no one, I will close the public hearing. And board, what is your pleasure?
Move approval of Resolution 1325.
Second.
It's been moved and second the approval of Resolution 1325. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, roll call. Sanders?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Resolution 1325 is adopted. Thank you. We'll see you a little bit later. Okay. Moving on to the second item under public hearing is the second consideration of Ordinance 218, rezoning certain lands located in Section 22 of Franklin Township under the ownership of Oaks Development Group, LLC, CEO Chuck Winkleblack, from A1 Agricultural and 1-2 Industrial to AR Agricultural. Charlie DeSalle from Planning and Development.
We have nothing to add to the presentation from last week. The only thing I will add is if you do approve on second consideration and we move third consideration on next week, we will also be bringing the subdivision plat forward at that point, the preliminary plat. So be expecting that next week if you do move approval today.
Okay, any further questions to Charlie at this time, board? Okay, seeing none, I will then open the public hearing and ask if there's anyone that would like to speak to this ordinance. Okay, seeing no one, then I will close the public hearing. Board?
I'll move approval of Ordinance 218 and set third and final reading for next Tuesday.
Okay. Second.
Okay, it's been moved and second. The approval of Ordinance 218 on second consideration and set the third and final for next Tuesday, which is November the 13th. Okay. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, roll call. Sanders?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Ordinance 218 passed on second consideration and third and final will be next Tuesday on the 13th. Thank you. Okay. Moving on to item 3 under public hearing is first consideration of Ordinance number 219, amending Chapter 10 of the conditional use consistent with the requirement of Chapter 15 amendment. Planning and Development Director Leanne Harder.
The nature of the changes that are before you today are to address the addition of supplemental standards to address the inclusion for solar regulations and non-commercial wind energy regulations. This was part of the CPAT recommendation. I do a full-scale audit of our regulations to address these two specific areas, and we are here today. I did really go into detail in the staff report, but I just do want to review the nature of the changes in brief. For Chapter 2, we are recommending just spelling out WECS, and so it says Wind Energy Conversion System, but the primary change is to add a definition for non-commercial solar energy system, so basically solar panels, whether ground-mounted or roof-mounted for single-family residential homes or commercial facilities, not that sold back to the grid, however. The second section proposed to be amended is amending Section 4.20, 4.30, and 4.40, and these are the zoning districts for the A1, A2, and AR districts, and currently non-commercial WECs are permitted as a permitted accessory use. We have proposed some changes to the language, the regulations that are in effect, to be in line with the model ordinance that was set up by the Iowa Utilities Board and Iowa League of Cities. Specifically, we address setbacks, amendments to engineer certification requirement, compliance with the FAA regulations, and with that, we want to add language referencing the airport protection area of the county of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, utility notification, and then requirements regarding insurance, screening and safety, signage and lighting. Those last four are all new standards that we would propose adding. And then adding The same language that I just referenced to all other zoning districts, excluding the Greenbelt Conservation. Right now, we only allow it in the first three. These are non-commercial WECs, wind energy conversion systems. We'd like to see them added to all of them, excluding, again, the Greenbelt Conservation District. And then the fourth major change is adding language regarding non-commercial SESs, which are a solar energy system. You know, planners, we like our acronyms. To all zoning districts, exclusive, again, of the Greenbelt Conservation. So we have our standards regarding height, setback, the placement to reduce glare on neighboring property owners and roadways, compliance, again, with FAA regulations and the airport protection area, compliance with the National Electric Code, and, again, utility notification. And then the last change is to amend Table 10.1, Table of Conditional Uses. Right now, we specify the use by a private utility service. We just recommend striking private. With that, the proposed changes were reviewed by the Planning and Zoning Commission this last month. Before I go to that, I know you really can't see, but the fourth image down on the right, these are actually trees that have been constructed in Singapore. If anyone has a chance, just to Google Singapore solar trees as part of a bay park they have, it's truly breathtaking. And the reason I put these up here, these actually collect solar power than is used to power the facility. These are 50-meter trees that are made of steel structure with solar panels built in, but then surrounding them, they've planted green vines, whatever, native to Singapore, so that they'll encirculate it and make a tree canopy. It is truly breathtaking.
Are they being used any place in the United States that you're aware of?
That I know of. I think this is a one of a kind project. Again, Planning and Zoning Commission did recommend approval of this on October 1st and did ask that we place on your agenda for today. And your alternatives are up there before you and were spelled out in the staff report. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Okay, are there questions for Leanne at this time, Board? Okay. All right, if that's time, then I will open a public hearing and ask if there's anyone that would like to speak to ordinance number 219. Okay. Seeing no one, then I will close the public hearing.
Ordinance 219 on the first reading and set the second reading for next Tuesday, November 13th.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and second to approval of ordinance number 219 on first consideration and set second consideration for next Tuesday on the 13th. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none. Toot?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Ordinance 219 approved on first consideration and second consideration for next Tuesday. Thank you. Okay, then moving on to item number 9, discussion and consideration of Story County Performance Management and Evaluation System. HR Directors Alyssa Whitnall. Welcome.
Good morning. This is the performance management evaluation system that Springstead formed for us. I have the complete manual that I'm asking for approval. It just gives a good detail to the employees or the supervisors that are filling out the evaluations exactly what to look for, how to evaluate. It's really detailed. They probably won't need everything in there, but It's a good guide for them. The actual evaluation itself is pretty detailed. Also, looking through our old evaluations, they didn't really evaluate employees based on their job functions. It was just a lot of other details that we evaluated on. This form that the supervisors will fill out not only evaluates employees on their essential job duties, it also includes other performance factors such as initiative, is the employee reliable, are they punctual, and they're using sick leave appropriately. So it kind of takes all those into effect and puts them together into one evaluation. There's also a section in here for goals. I don't see that on a lot of our old evaluations. We didn't have employees setting goals, so that's another important factor. So other than that, it's pretty, you know, we did have supervisor training. Springstead came up and kind of went through this with the supervisors and the department heads. I didn't get a lot of feedback from that. The forms are a lot longer than what they're used to. So with this, there is no pay for performance tied to this at this point. This is the first step in that.
What do you anticipate will be a follow-up from your office with the various department heads as we move forward, assuming we approve this document?
Once you approve this, I plan on our staff meeting to discuss it a little bit next week. Each of the forms are specific to a job description, so I will have to send those all out to the department heads and elected officials, so they'll get that. We will be tracking. They will all be due probably after the first of the year. So they'll have a due date. They'll turn them in. I will have one of my employees log to make sure we have an evaluation for every employee. We have some departments that are really good at that and some that have not done evaluations for quite a while.
Okay. Any other questions for Alyssa at this time, Board? Okay. All righty. So with that, I would turn to you for which direction would you like to see regarding the performance and management evaluation system.
I'd move adoption of the performance and management evaluation system as submitted.
Second that.
It's been moved and second the adoption to approve the adoption of the performance management evaluation system as presented. Is there further discussion? Okay. Just to comment again, Alyssa, we want to again thank you for your guidance through this matter. Also, the process through which we worked with Springstead and bringing them on board, and look forward to the future direction under your leadership. So,
just one thing, this is for non-union.
Right.
I forgot to mention
right.
that.
Right, yeah.
Yep. Well, that's good. And I think I would just point out before we vote, I don't view this as any way, shape, or form the end of this force. I view this as the beginning.
Right.
And as we get in, we're going to find some parts of this that we really, really like and some parts that we don't like. But I think it's important that as a county we adopt something that requires this for all of our non-union employees.
Good. Okay. Thank you for those comments. So with that, all in favor, motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Okay. Moving on to item 10, agency report, DHS, Pat Penning. Welcome, Pat.
Hi, Pat. You all have copies because I did bring some extras because I got out here kind of late. Just to give you a quick update, I thought I would list the staff we have in our office. We are fully staffed here in Story County and have been for a while with 34 people, although there's one person I missed getting this on here yesterday. We also have a person there handling child care center licensing, so it's actually 35 versus 34. And as you know, we are pretty cramped in there, and there isn't really any space for us to be doing family interactions or family team meetings with any privacy at all, and that continues to be a concern for us, and I want to continue to bring that forth to you as the board.
Pat, how are they using that small conference room upstairs outside of the DCAT office?
I think they're starting to use it a little bit. It's kind of small for family team meeting, perhaps, depending on the size of the family. But I think they have started using that a little bit.
And that, and also using kind of that back hallway dead area, is that right?
We have a concern about using that for that type of thing because there's a big window there and there's not really much privacy at all. People come in that back door and walk through there, so we really don't like to do confidential type things there or visits there.
Okay. All right.
Okay. As far as child welfare, group care referrals continue. We're slightly over, but not too bad. They actually seem to have gone down the last few months. We are looking at, the department is looking at a differential response according to the legislative, give us a mandate to look at that. I know Minnesota has had that for several years. And looking at a different way of, instead of doing assessments on people when they're referred, if it's a lesser type of offense, that we actually often go in and work with some families to do some services rather than bring them into the child welfare system. So we're in the process of reviewing that. And again, the Parent Partner Program continues to expand across the state. We are looking at possibly doing an RFP for that for a statewide option coming this next year. That's not finalized yet. But you know that for DCAT here, Caitlin Hofeld has been hired. And we did work through some issues with Boone County because Boone, Dallas, and Story are in a group together for a grant for parent partners. And some of those monies were now designated to specifically to Story County within that. And the lead parent partner is working with all three counties. So that continues to go well. And so far, I think Caitlin's doing a really good job. Coming in totally new to it. I think she's.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's different than Ann. You know, Ann brought her own skill set to it, and but I think there's a lot of potential for Caitlin. I'm excited to see what she does with that.
And I think Ann has been a big help to her, too, in learning and moving on with what she needs to do in that process. And it's different than Ann's role because it's only a piece of what Ann used to do because of the split with the other parts of that entity. Then what I attached was just the child welfare by the numbers because for calendar year 2011, that is, did it just come out not too long ago? Just so you can see with, and this is for the state of Iowa, you can see the number of assessments of abuse that we have done throughout the calendar year of 2011, which were 30,747 assessments for child abuse. You can see also that 68% of those result in a finding of no abuse, and that's pretty common. That stays pretty steady, but we continue to get those numbers, and people are concerned about the children of Iowa, obviously. What the interesting thing is of the neglect and what they were of the child abuse, what they were found to be founded for, and it's 79% of those are neglect or denial of critical care. So they're either not providing proper shelter, proper food, not clothing, etc. But I think it's a little misleading because it shows 5% was presence of illegal drugs in the body. So many of these other cases do have drugs involved with them. It's just that the drugs were not found in the body. So I think it's a little misleading for people to look, well, we don't have a drug problem because there's only 5%. Well, that's not really true. Majority of the families that we work with do have some kind of substance abuse issue going on in their family. Then down to the bottom, just to draw your attention to the dollars that are involved within the child welfare system. State dollars actually are probably less than all the other dollars that come into the state surrounding child welfare. There's a lot of federal match dollars that come in with many of the child welfare services. Just wanted to draw your attention to that. Any questions?
No. Tom Subbett yesterday at juvenile justice meeting and so forth kind of told us a little bit about the status of what's happening in the juvenile arena in terms of some of the successful programs that they have in place involving counseling and working with parents that have proven to be very successful, but was concerned a little bit about what the future may hold in terms of dollars that are currently going for this one program, whether it might be affected through either DHS or the state. You might just double check, and I know he's planning to keep you posted as well as the legislators regarding what this would do to one of the very successful programs. And this program is done within the region with several of the other supporting counties. Well, I wrote my notes down, but it's in the back of the car, so I didn't know exactly what the title of that was. But all in all, he was very pleased with what's happening. As you well know, with the whole area in mental health redesign, we're hearing little or nothing about what's happening for the children and youth. And that is still very troubling because the need is continuing to be there, and we know that at some point we'd like to see an aggressive stance by the legislature this year in terms of letting various agencies and providers know what direction that the future holds as far as the redesign for our juveniles. But I'm sure that you guys will be closely aligned with that overall discussion, and it's certainly very much aware of the programs. And he spoke very highly of, again, the continual relationship between the court system and DHS throughout this whole process, and the youth that is perhaps either going to Eldora or the other detention facilities, Oakdale and several others. So it was a positive approach, but yet one of cautionary concern about future funding. And, of course, everything is still based on funding, as you well know.
And the chief juvenile court officers and the service area managers meet on a very regular basis to keep abreast of the things that affect us both. And, of course, as the legislative session comes into play, we'll be sharing information with them as well about what the needs of the kids are.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. You bet. Okay. Departmental report, RVM. Joe.
And Tyler.
Is that your show and tell?
Yeah, the little known guy.
That's your prop. Eddie at the front goes, what's Quaker bringing in a bag?
Okay, seed.
I brought this before. I'm going to leave it right here. Get in. Stop.
Rick, see, you shouldn't ask for stuff like this. You don't know what you're going to get from this guy.
Got to give.
Okay. Well, so now you get a visual and a hands-on little party favor from the Wheels Hit the Pavement IRVM program, Integrated Roadside Vegetation Management, and the drainage ditch specialist here, Tyler Kelly. I think the last time we were allowed in here to talk to you guys, it was really hot. Things were having a hard time growing. Rick, you were, I don't think you were here at the last board meeting, but we hadn't had a lot of rain. It's kind of different now coming into the fall. We've had a really good growing season. Believe it or not, things took off later in the year if you looked out. And even this morning when I was watching the news, there were, you know, I was driving across the state last weekend, I could see these fields that were really green. I'm like, what's going on? Well, some of the farmers are planting radishes as a cover crop, believe it or not, with an airplane. Did you guys know that? Well, anyway, I'll talk a little bit about the program. Help me out, Tyler. We'll start with plantings. Darren's been in here. Darren Moon, the Story County engineer, and I know you're aware of, they've had really good weather, and they've been able to get a lot of construction done this year and last fall, and they're going this fall. I think they're starting to regrade the minute it dries up a little bit. We welcome the rain. That means that Tyler and I looked up, on average, we do about 30 to 40 acres of roadside plantings a year in the past 12 years. We've had some spikes with R38 and things like that. We budgeted for it. We talked to Todd. We had a meeting Monday, and we tried to come up with some projections on how much work actually we're going to get done. And they're over approximately 80 to 100 acres of roadside acres that are going to need to be planted with all the construction. So with that, we did a few sites this fall. We're going to do more what we call frost seeding or dormant seeding, and that's going to start next week with our hydro seeder. And we've done this where we've had to break ice with an axe under the bridges to get water, because we suck the water out of the bridge, out of the creeks with our rig, and then we spray it on. But we're going to have a little hard time finding those. We may have to fill up at some of the municipality areas where we have in the past, and water levels are low. We did get back on R38, and that was a picture of R38, by the way. You know, the drainage ditch and the new construction, that greened up pretty well. There's some sites. That's the only storm we had, too, by the way, you know, believe it or not, last spring. But we had some sites that didn't take off very well, so we went back in, and I don't have a picture of that, but we went back in, and as Tyler was mowing with our mower on that boom mower, I was seeding behind him, drilling in some things with our tractor and drill. And we did actually hit a silt fence post through the sidewall of our tire once and slowed us down, but that'll happen. Brush spraying, we have contracted out the past 5 years, this will be the sixth year now, with contractors. There's not a lot of them out there that do brush spraying per contract in the county. Again, this is brush 10 feet, 12 feet or less, and
in our roadsides, not in front, in the same roadside in front of residences out in the rural areas. And, of course, we don't spray in the municipality areas or in town. We were able to cover Warren, Lincoln, Howard, Sherman, and Richland Town. Did I already say Richland? Townships. So all the way across and then down to and over. And I was kind of looking for a map, but it's up and over. So, you know, a lot of people, conservation, spray brush. We're not really hitting the plum thickets and some of the wildlife value areas. We're basically hitting volunteer trees that do affect the integrity of the roadside as far as the root system going in and or tree limbs hitting cars. And the one thing that does help with, you know, with our brush program, we don't really have a brush problem in Story County, as some people would call it a problem. When we do have inclement weather, when we have the storms, ice, snow, March, late February, we're not having to go out in the at night picking some of these branches up. We have it whittled back pretty well.
Bill, may I ask a question regarding this? This, as I look at this, this picture is somewhat deceiving. Depending upon direction travel, there appears to be a visibility problem of a site of a certain distance. When you run into that, to your knowledge, there is no signing, notifying site difficulty as people are approaching a curve like this.
This is actually a T intersection.
Okay.
And it's not a controlled intersection, as many gravel roads are in Iowa. But this is why we threw this in there. This is honeysuckle, isn't it? This is kind of, by the way, the plant honeysuckle, you know, kudzu, if you go down south, and all, you know, I'm trying to get your question, is a plant that ate the south. I mean, that stuff, there's, you know, some pretty funny pictures of kudzu growing in cars that sit for a while alongside the road down. We have honeysuckle. And anytime you clear a nice timber or even not so nice timber, anytime you get sunlight to this plant, man, it just grows out and it seeks the sunlight. So it's hitting. You can see that, you know, the suckers are hitting straight for the sunlight. And so this is kind of why we have that spray program, Wayne, is to curve this back. And honeysuckle in Story County is a problem, not just in roadsides, but in some of our natural areas that we're, you know, we're putting a lot of effort in to try to get this plant and somewhat under control so our systems are a little more stable. Okay. Yeah. Got to keep moving. There's our honeysuckle. You can see that. It's coming out in the road. Harvest, that's what you have in front of you. That's about an 18-pound bag. Interesting, you know, I like to talk about this, 3,200 pounds of bulk seed. That's the chaff and the seed included. We just finished up late Friday night harvesting. I think we have another picture. That was it. There you go. And this is our, you know, for the folks out here, we run an old Massey Ferguson and it's a good tractor, and these we have three of these. Alice Chalmer, this is number two, as you can tell, Art. See, it says number two on there. We have three of them. These old Alice Chalmers Model 72, and we run these not only in Story County areas, but we do have an individual that has some nurseries, and we partnership with that family, and they get less than half. You know, the deal is half. They always give us a little more of the seed that we harvest, the bulk. And the deal with that is they actually help bag the seed, dry it, tag it, and deliver it to our seed shed. So it really is a good deal. A lot of labor. But 3,200 pounds, if you put the numbers, and let's just say I'm at 10 to, you know, even 15 to 20% seed, we're talking 5 to 600 pounds of seed, which would do anywhere from 25 to 50 acres. Market price is $300 an acre, so we're at $15,000 to $20,000 worth of seed that we harvested in house to help seed our roadsides in Story County, and also we do have some new areas coming up, as you're aware of, the Dakins Lake. There are some areas there that we need to stabilize, and also the Jeanette property. We do have some rental ground there that goes out of rent, and so we need to stabilize and get some natives in on that. And we don't budget for that seed. That's all coming from these old Alice Chalmers combines. So we had a good year for seed harvest. We worked hard at it. And the other thing, before Tyler starts on his open ditch work, we did have some money in our extra help line item after this year. Last year was kind of a fiasco. This year we had some left over. Some of the extra help took vacation. You know, 2 or 3 weeks, 4 weeks adds up. If you can get some kids from Iowa State over and work part-time through the year. So we actually have three extra help folks coming in about 20 hours to 25 hours a week total between all of them every week to help mainly Skippy here on his drainage ditches and us in the future doing some hydro seeding as we go. So that is, you know, going to be a big thing. With a program of two, we can get these kids and they'll meet us on job site to help us get some work done. So that's kind of a bonus. Tyler?
Go for it. Yeah, let me figure out how to get this straightened out or whatnot. My name's Tyler Kelly. I don't think I met you last time, Rick. But anyway, this is our first real shot at this drainage ditch program. This summer we had a little bit of problems with staff. We've looked at that in our next fiscal year budget, and hopefully we'll get that straightened out. But basically every time that I wanted to do some chainsaw work or some spray work, I had to take one of Joe's employees. And it was kind of one of those deals where we weren't really excelling in either program, the drainage ditch program or the roadside program. We were just keep our heads above water. As of October, we hired these two new employees, and we've hit the ground running with that. Right now, the main kind of work we are doing is we're taking chainsaws and cutting into these trees anywhere from 25 to 30 feet trees. And we cut into these, and we use a special herbicide. It's a triclosan-based herbicide. It actually kills the trees while they're standing. And while it kills the trees while it's standing, it's kind of like a slow death, and it also kills the roots below ground. And that, if you look in this picture right here, is mainly part of the problem. You see an outlet tile, and it's just nothing but brush all the way around it. In some of your clay tiles, it'll actually get into the tile and plug it up to the point where no water comes out.
What percentage would you say would be like this of the areas that we are going through? This
would be to the low end of the spectrum. Most of the areas that I'm doing work on right now, they do look like this, but it doesn't get any better. The other areas that I'm looking at are bigger trees with a lot more circumference, and they're a lot more heavy. Right here, as you see in this picture, is a lot of small brush in other areas, but that picture on the right, that's kind of what we're getting into. In some of the other projects, you see a lot more heavier trees, heavier root system growing up.
Now, Joe, and is this the port that is built back through the county that we sign off on? This is not something that goes directly to the drainage trust or that the trustees approve to the actual property owners?
We haven't got into that part yet. This is just work done and build back to the property owners adjacent to the drainage district.
So the work at Grant 13 will be billed back to the drainage district 13.
Correct.
And
right.
You're doing a good job keeping track
of that.
Yep.
And Tyler, I'd just be interested to get your perspective as you started to weigh into this. Is this a program that we can hope to have some success doing, or is there just too much there to really be able to do anything? I mean, the goal is that we're not going to have to go spend hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Right.
To do these drainage districts, we're going to be able to handle it one step at a time.
Maintenance is what we're trying to do, is stay ahead of the game. So,
yeah, when I'm looking at some of these projects, mainly this Grant 13, they did some work on it in 1997, and now I'm going back, and these trees are that big. So it's one of those things where you got to start from somewhere. Milford 32, they just cleared that out. And I think now that we have this program off and running, it'll be a lot better for us to keep track of what happened, keep track of these areas and make sure we keep them controlled so they don't get to the point where we have to go in and clear them out. But absolutely, there's plenty of work out there that we can get done, and I see a pretty good future in the program, I guess.
How many miles of open ditch do we have in our drainage ditch system? Rough guess, Joe?
A lot.
Yeah, I know it's a lot. I'm just wondering, is it reasonable? I mean, the goal in this thing, as I recall our initial conversations, was that we would put a program in place that not only tried to deal with these things, but where we were actually walking all of our open ditches. I want to say it was every 2 years, Joe. You correct me if I'm wrong there. Just so we stay on top of it, and we see these problems way ahead of time, rather than getting into a situation where we got to spend $600,000 to do a drainage ditch.
We're, 5 months into a program that hasn't had any maintenance in 40 right. years, if then. You know, we've been catching up and putting out fires. So I think the program is a great idea, and we are working out the glitches, just like the staffing. We need to get some more warm bodies out there to help each other do this, and we were able to do that. You know, we found some money in the budget. That's one thing we learned. Another thing would be equipment. You know, I sat in front of the board and said, well, I think we can do this with existing equipment. But sometimes when you have one Polaris and a sprayer, if we're going to do that corner where we saw the honeysuckle, that Polaris may be in the drainage ditch at that moment, so we need to kind of work out a system there. But the answer is, I think it's a program that can go, or I wouldn't be sitting here trying to promote it. But we have a ways to go. We'll know a little more in February. We'll see how the winter treats us.
And are we able to do a really good job tracking, Tyler, your efforts and mm-hmm. staff efforts so that we can get this built to the right drainage district?
We there's a lot of folks on top of that, not just
good.
Us. So
good.
If it was up to me, of course, my balancing the checkbook, I haven't done it since college, but luckily the wife knows how. But with Tyler on track and Vicky and Mike Cox, the director, we're all good.
And then just one more thing. As I'm going through and doing this work, I'm actually also doing a condition assessment on all the other areas, open ditch areas, pretty much what you're saying. I'm doing a walkthrough and all, and I'm saying classifying them in five different categories, the original ones I think you guys came up with, on what this area is and what we can do to control it.
Perfect. Thank you.
Now, as you've got these pictures captured here, are you doing a before and after type of picture catalog so that we can see the results? And the key would be go back 2 years from now and look at the growth back in that area, kind of document, how successful we are, or whether we still need to be continuing to beef up the amount of work that needs to be done in a given area.
Yeah, I have been doing on some of the projects, not all of them, but I have been doing
photo gallery.
Yeah, photo gallery, right. File of the
right.
work being done. It's just a slow start for what I think is going to be a big program, I guess.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
All right, thanks.
Who's that on top of the... with the sprayers.
That's Rose.
I was going to say that didn't look like you.
No.
Okay. Good. All right. Thank you. All right. Very good. And about how much would this here cover alone if you were out putting this seed down?
That bag, I can see if it weighs about as much as a turkey.
Yeah. About 19 pounds. There's about 3 pounds of seed. 15 pounds, so
carry
the knot, Jethro, about $45.
So, for an area that it would cover approximately?
Pounds, just about half an acre.
About half, okay. Wow.
So,
yeah, I bet it does. I'm glad you put it over here. My nose has been running ever since it's Thanks, Joe, and thanks, Tyler. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, guys.
You bet. Okay, then moving on to the second item is planning and development, Leanne Harder.
I asked Charlie to join me so he can spend some time with you updating you on a couple initiatives, one being the Connect Iowa, and then the second item is the mass storage of agricultural materials that has been tabled. After he's done, I'm going to talk about a little bit about things such as the Worley Creek PMR and then go over some of the items that you have in front of you, too. So, Charlie, with that, I'll hand it to you.
Well, first with the Connect Iowa initiative that we've been working on now for, seems like, a couple months. Were you at the meeting on Friday, Rick? That Economic Development Group meeting?
Nope.
Okay. Well, where we're at in that, and is last time we had talked with them, with the group, we decided that it might be who of us to see if we could get some outside help maybe to do some of the odds and ends as far as gathering the data on this, just because it is such a time-consuming initiative. We estimated that to get it done at probably about 10 weeks, working 20 hours a week just to gather all this stuff. It's my understanding that the Story County Economic Development Group last Friday did support funding an interim position, $2,500 worth of funding on that, which, in my opinion, would definitely cover any time we would need to do that. I don't think we would need to add any funding to that. So with that, that's where we stand on that. You know, we need to discuss internally, I think, exactly how we would house this position, office space and stuff like that, where it would be located, and we have yet to do that. So that's where we're standing on that. Hopefully, once we get that figured out, and we can hopefully get it figured out, I would hope by the beginning of the year, again, we would estimate probably about 10 weeks after that to hopefully get this whole initiative wrapped up. So I guess by spring next year, we should be done with it. So. Any questions on that at all? Perfect. Regarding the mass storage of agricultural materials, you recall about a month ago, I think we presented that first reading of the ordinance. On that, it was tabled back to the Planning and Zoning Commission, and our plan is to take that back for the December 3rd meeting, I believe it is. I know, Paul, you were there about 2 weeks ago. We met with DuPont on site over at their facility in Boone County, and realistically, I think they just kind of wanted to let us know exactly what they're doing, kind of explain how they do it, and just give us a lot more information on it. It was actually a very informative outing, I thought, with that. I'm still not sure if we need to make any changes to what we've proposed. I've asked them at this point if they feel that we should be doing anything different to kind of let us know, and if they have any suggestions on how we could handle it to let us know. My feeling on it is that they would probably rather us not have any regulation on it, and I kind of feel that's where that presentation was heading, to convince us that we don't need to regulate it. But I think everybody at the table, I know me and Paul were there, Darren Moon was there, the engineer, and Keith Morgan with emergency management was there as well, and I think we kind of all concluded that we definitely need to do something about this and have some sort of oversight on it. So hopefully we can hear back with them before that December 3rd meeting to see if they have any other recommendations for us and how to handle it. But at this point, I think from a staff standpoint, we're comfortable going forward with what we've recommended, but we'll hash that out with the Planning
and
Commission.
And what I would ask also before that December 3rd is that you guys spend a little time and visit with the county attorney and with Jessica, just to make sure as a county some of the questions about agriculturally related products and where our authority lies in that we get all of that straightened out before any recommendation comes back to us and we take it off the table and move ahead.
And I want to have kind of an internal staff meeting with everybody that was present, too, before we go to the Planning and Zoning Commission, just to make sure that we're all on the same page. So I probably make sure that we'll invite Jessica to that meeting. So I don't know if you want to add anything to that, Paul.
I'm still really struggling with all this. I've been by the site that they've got east of the interstate, south of E-29, and the day I drove by there, it was a mess. I mean, it didn't look anything like the way they described the one that's supposed to be south of Colo. So I don't know. Is it any different than a grain elevator? I mean, DuPont is currently leasing the ground to put these sites on, but DuPont's made it clear that they don't want to be in this business once this plant is up and running. So, I guess at that point, once DuPont's, you know, once the lease is up with the landowners for these collection sites, you know, then where does it go? So yeah. There's just a lot of questions that haven't been answered.
Well, I think really valid questions that we need to have answered, but we also need to understand what our authority is,
right,
per the state of Iowa, because those two may run into conflict with each other. But I don't think we're wrong for asking the questions and wanting some answers, because some of the questions I hear us asking are questions that I don't know that DuPont can answer right now.
Yeah, I don't think they can either.
And I mean, from my standpoint, every indication I was given, I don't think DuPont is, you know, going to be doing anything wrong. And I think everything they would present to us would probably be in accord with anything that we would want. The only issue I would always raise is from a planning standpoint, you know, if this is a successful initiative that they have with the cellulose ethanol, we could have more plants in the future under different companies. And who knows if those companies would be as willing to work with us as DuPont is. But, you know, in my opinion, DuPont's been great so far. They seem like they're really doing their due diligence, being good stewards of the land. So I don't necessarily have a problem there. But as Paul said, you know, their plans are they're going to probably be out of this whole endeavor within 5 to 10 years. And then where does it go from there? So
thanks, Troy.
If you'll recall, a couple weeks ago, we did talk about in work session format CPAT and do some follow-up to that report. We have it hopefully on your agenda for the 13th to follow up from that work session with the presentation on capital improvements plan or programming. And then
I can't remember, Leanne, am I putting that on the agenda or are you putting that on the agenda? I know we talked about it yesterday.
I think you said you are.
Okay. But you're going to forward me some information that I need to include with that.
Yeah. And then in front of you, it's a half sheet of paper, or a sheet of paper folded in half with pictures of all the county buildings. If you recall, one of the recommendations from the Government Restructuring Committee report was to kind of compile a list of services offered by Story County. This is something that we've put together very quickly, and it's in draft format. I do need to mention that. Kind of twofold, one responding to that recommendation, but also when people come to our counter, they have a lot of questions, where's the engineer's office? And we have a map we give them, but this is just one quick way we could, as a county, show what services we have to offer, where the county facilities are. So I wanted to bring that to you to see if that's something you would like us to spend some time polishing or, you know, just drop it as it is. It will be very beneficial for us, as I said, as a department, to be able to hand this out to people, something in this sort. I'm not sure that all services and permits have been addressed. I went through our website pretty comprehensively, and again, having the benefit of the GRC report, have a good handle on what happens where, but there may be some things missing.
So are you contemplating that this would be added to the website as a point of location? And
it could be. It could be easily, just like the Guide to Rural Living. But again, it's draft format, and you know, it took an hour or two to really develop. But I didn't want to spend any more time on it without receiving some direction from the board that this is a worthwhile endeavor to pursue. And
I think it's a good idea. I mean, that was one of the recommendations restructuring committee is that you know, we kind of needed try to make things a little bit more user friendly, and I think any steps we can take in that direction would benefit everybody. So
I think it's worth pursuing. My 2 cents worth is I'm not wild about the whole bold italic.
It was all bold to begin with, and then it was all italics. There's some playing to do with that. Yeah.
I think it's worth your time to play with it some more and see what you can come with. I think the information in here would be worthwhile to have in one handout or one-page website kind of thing.
I'll try and find some time. If not, I'd like to maybe bring it to the staff meeting next week, too, to let everyone know what's happening with it. It may or may not be polished by next week. But, yeah, Rick, I do agree with that.
And then think about places around the county where something like this could be posted just in this little flyer form. You know, there's a lot of areas and businesses, gas stations, convenience stores, libraries, different places that, you know, people do, you know, frequent, that would be a good point to have something like this available.
we're putting together a list of that too. In front of you too was the most updated copy of the local food report based on your changes you made in July that are now reflected on that. Just quickly, last week was the annual American Planning Association's Fall Iowa Chapter Fall Conference. I put Ames River Fringe slide in there because Charlie did present with Ames staff and City of Gilbert consultants on the Ames River Fringe. Just a couple other sessions that went to the Dakota County Greenway Collaborative. I'm going to forward this on to Mike Cox. This was I appreciated the session greatly. There are some strategies that he may be able to use as they look at greenways planning for Story County and trails planning. There's a session on Agenda 21, online engagement by Mind Mixer, which is maybe an initiative as a county we might want to look at to involve public in different initiatives. And then looking at Storm Lake and what's happening with their demographics. It's very interesting. I was not aware of how the demographics have shifted so substantially in the past 15 years in Storm Lake. So if you'd like to see a copy of that presentation, they did provide us with all of them. And Charlie was there as well as was on the local planning committee. It was an exceptional conference. I think it was well attended, but it was very well run too. We did send out the notices for the Worley Creek physical map revision. This went out in October. We sent out 38 notices for 48 parcels. We haven't received a single inquiry back. So I think people are pleased with the physical map revision. Did put our contact information as well as the DNR and FEMA. The portal for the changes will remain open until November 16th. At such time, FEMA will close it, or the contractor working for FEMA will close it down. And then any changes received after that probably will not be able to be incorporated. I emailed Scott Ralston this morning, but I haven't heard anything back if he's received comments. But again, this is something that's necessary, and I think overall people will be very favorable to the changes. Development review, you've already seen the second consideration of Oak Street zoning, and as Charlie said, we'll have the subdivision plat along with third consideration next week. The mass storage is still tabled. You did first consideration of our small wind and solar regulations. We have an agricultural subdivision called the Heinz Agricultural Subdivision coming up next Tuesday. We are not putting on consent. It will be on additional items. There might be some questions on access that we need to be brought forth. Superior variance request is a variance to the 35-acre minimum. That's being acted on by the Board of Adjustment tomorrow night. The Wonder Appeal, this is an appeal of an agricultural exemption down by Slater. This has been tabled till the December Board of Adjustment, and they'll bring that back up. The 2013 calendars coming forth in probably the first of the year will be the Lundy subdivision. And we have a busy conceptual review next week. We have three items. Black's Enterprises. This is to put a... when you take trees and debris and shrubs and grind them down, the word has totally escaped. Mulching facility, some sort of a mulching facility.
Grain part.
Yeah, thank you. On the Black Enterprise South, and then NADI is to further subdivide land as part of POP subdivision northwest of Nevada, and then Nissen is part of the currently, they have a retail farm and novelty for the winery up there. They'd like to expand that and add sales of produce on site, so have some sort of a restaurant facility for local food production. So those are all going for conceptual review. I shared this a couple of months ago for you. There is a new addition to the planning and development family. Ryan and Sonia Stolze-Newstrom had a baby boy last Thursday. And so Ryan is temporarily not at work. He's doing a different type of work right now. So Charlie and I are taking Ryan's territories and dividing them up. Charlie's taken on Washington, Palestine, and Union, and then I have Indian Creek and Collins. Once we get back to full staff with Ryan back 100%, we'll go back to the old territories. And then Brown Bag Lunches, I'm trying to get the first date scheduled. I was hoping to start with the Ames Urban Fringe plan and process, but since their director has left for a different position, Bob Kindred is the interim director. I emailed him, but I haven't heard back, which I know Bob is absolutely swamped over there. So I think we'll start in November with the residential parcel subdivision, then December do the requirements of the A1 zoning district, and then after the first few years do the floodplain. And I think we might choose to do the floodplain in two different sessions. So we'll actually have 5 brown bag lunches, and then end with the Ames River and Fringe. And now, with that, any questions? You know, Joe always brings show and tell, and I really hate following Joe because of that. But yesterday, the corner of T and 11th Street in Nevada here, I did see this bald eagle. And I haven't gone back up this morning to see if it was still there. But I'm zoomed in as far as I can with my cell phone, and it is still a huge bird. And I didn't catch it to bring it in today. I just caught it on...
All right, all Joe brought was a big bag of something. Don't worry, you know, I'm worried about that.
Yeah.
Ooh, okay.
I know I can't catch it.
All right. Any further questions for the two of them?
Okay. Thanks.
Ben, thanks again. Looks like you continue to be very busy here in the next few months, so thank you. Okay, moving on to item 12, liaison assignments and committee updates. Anything, Paul?
Pass.
Very briefly, I met yesterday with Deb Shilroff. Again, at a regularly scheduled meeting, primarily a brief discussion dealt with the transition fund that was handled last week. It had been received at the state level. Hopefully we'll hear something about the end of after December 1st. Regarding whether or not we will be awarded the dollars that we've submitted. I think it's about $2.5 million. We may get a part of that, but that was, they felt was that there were a lot of effort that went into analyzing what our needs were and felt good about it. We also talked about the upcoming redistricting. Or regionalization, and the discussion that we will be having in another week with not only the providers, but also with 6 other counties regarding future direction of regionalization. And we spent some time talking about the joint funders meeting that will be this Thursday. In that meeting, of course, one of the topics will be the future direction of the CFR, the substance abuse provider for Story County. And we anticipate that that will be the main topic. And there was also some ongoing discussion about HRDA and the transportation and some of the challenges that we're having still during the transition. We are making some changes in the main office here in Ames, but we're continuing to still have a few issues surface, some of them involving clients at Heartland. That is certainly not the norm and the way we want to operate. So we've assured everybody that we're continuing to address that. And we're keeping Deb posted, and I think they have a meeting tomorrow with her regarding the billing process and the differences in the fares between what they were under Heartland and what they are now for Story County. So a contract has not been signed as yet. That contract will be hopefully signed within the next week or two, and then a recommendation to release funding from the asset process. So just you'll hear something about that a little bit later. But other than that, that's about it. Okay, no other reports on item 13. Item 14, we have several members of the audience here. This is a public comment period. This is on items not on the agenda. The board may not take any action due to requirements of the open meetings and laws, but may do so in the future. We have representatives from Gilbert, and I'll just take them in the order in which they're presented. And I believe the first one is it Lindsay Beecher? Okay, Lindsay, come on down. Paving of the road, I think we've had this as a topic for some time.
How are you today?
Great.
Good.
Welcome.
Thank you. Just wanted to talk to you a little bit about, I know that we had been here earlier last year and talked about the paving that goes in front of our new building. We're looking at opening up that building in August of 2013. And the concern that we have, and we've expressed this before, is the fact that we'd like to see that possibly be paved, if at all. I know that I think it was moved from consideration to put on your five-year plan. The things that we're looking at it is that once we open up our new building, there will be a lot of traffic on that road, more than what we've ever seen. And we want to make sure that that's a very, very safe avenue for our kids to go back and forth to school. So just wanted to, I don't know where you're at with the consideration of that. I know that you have a lot of things that you have on your plate as far as different budgetary things, but just wanted you to keep that in mind. And as there's anything that we can do from the school standpoint, or we're working with the city of Gilbert, we would sure like to work with you in any way.
Good.
Okay. I mean, I think it's fair to say this is something that we've had hovering on our radar. Ames has requested a change in the MPO, which, Wayne, you serve on, correct, which would affect the area of Grant Avenue south of 190th. I'll tell you, from my personal view, I view that whole stretch kind of as one piece. To me, the major amount of traffic that we're going to see going 190th from 190th north on 530th is going to be coming out of Ames and those kids that are in the school system
right
up there. And so I'm really viewing that as one piece. And so for me, the wrinkle right now is discussion of changing the MPO and what that does to paving of Grant Avenue south of 190th and how that fits together with anything we would decide to do north of 190th. But I want you guys to be assured this is something that I mean, I think we've kept in the top of our mind and trying to figure out the right way to do something like this and the right timing to do something like this. But we appreciate you bringing it back to us.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, and I think that clearly is where it's at right now. You'll probably hear about the discussion when this comes up with the City of Ames MPO. Then the recommendation will go to SERPA to give the final either approval or rejection of the boundary change. And that will certainly give us a pretty clear idea as to what will take place within, you know, that geographical area of Ames itself. So we'll keep you posted on in regard to that. Next, we have comments from Frank. Is it Riddle? Riddle. Okay.
Thank you, Wayne. Similar to Lindsay's comments from a school board superintendent standpoint, being a member of the city of council, we have several projects that are kind of hanging in the wind. Number one would be the redesign of the Gretton Matthews intersection, which we need to do because it's a tight intersection, buses, trucks, traffic to and from school in Gilbert.
Help me, Matthews is what Grant turns into?
Gretton is what Grant. Matthews is the county road through Gilbert. We're working on trying to pick the best design for that intersection based on traffic, which paving of Grant and Gretton could change the flow of the traffic there. And then second to that, not to take away from Art, but we're looking at a place for a new fire station in Gilbert, which again, the determination of where that project is on the five-year plan or how quick it gets elevated in the five-year plan, you know, could help us hone in on the best spot for that, and trying to keep an open dialogue amongst the fire board, the city, the school, and the supervisors is what I want to do. Like Lindsay, you know, anything we can do or any guidance from your group would be well appreciated.
Thank you.
Okay. Art? Also, Art Fina.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you folks. I come wearing multiple hats this morning. Officially, I'm here as president of the Gilbert Franklin Township Fire Department Board. I also have 26 years of experience with the United States Department of Transportation as a special agent. One of the things that we look at professionally is accidents, causations, accident rates. From the fire department standpoint, EMS, we respond to a lot of personal injury accidents along that road. And those personal injury accidents are our children. Everybody here is represented from the Gilbert School District. We have children that travel that road, and as well as our families. And when you look at the demographics of who has accidents, you know, we know, as a matter of fact, that young males in the age bracket of our high school kids are our highest demographics for accident rate. And so if you take a look at the cross-section of the people who travel that road, it's going to be a high percentage of those children, of those boys. I have two teenage boys that travel that road. I live in Squaw Valley as a resident of Franklin Township, and so they are coming in from 190th, not from Ames. They're coming in from 190th and taking that road over towards the schools. And that's just going to increase. And from a professional standpoint, we know that gravel road is one of the highest accident frequency gravel roads in the state of Iowa. That's a fact. The Iowa DOT has identified that road as one of the most dangerous gravel roads in the state of Iowa. And here in Story County, you know, we're certainly blessed with multiple things that more rural counties and districts and townships don't have. You know, from a professional standpoint, I think it's important that we take a look at those types of things and address, you know, to think that in our township, in our county, we have one of the most dangerous gravel roads in the state of Iowa, and we're not doing anything, you know, progressing as fast as, of course, is what we would like to mitigate that. And paving that road would certainly have a long ways towards reducing our accident rates. And potentially, luckily, we haven't had very serious accidents there as far as personal injuries, but it's probably just a matter of time.
Art, could you provide me or us with some type of data that you just referenced? I think it would be very helpful.
That's the first time I've heard that.
Yeah, me too. It is the first time.
Art, I'd really appreciate it if you could visit with Darren Moon and just share the data, because we need to hear those kind of things. That wasn't part of any presentation that I heard up to this point, that was one of the most dangerous in Iowa.
Right.
I realize this is the first time I've presented to in front of you folks in this capacity. I provided that data a year or so ago, and my understanding is that the Story County Engineering Office has that data. And what I'll promise you that I can do is hopefully by close of business today have that email to the three of you to take a look at.
Sure.
Because it is on the Iowa DOT. I'm not with Iowa DOT, but it is on the Iowa DOT's radar screen, as that was one of the roads that was identified. You know, and as you know, that intersection there was an uncontrolled intersection, the gravel roads intersection, and stop signs were put in, which, you know, certainly is a benefit. But that's not going to keep our kids from losing control on the gravel, going in the ditches, from traveling too fast, inexperienced, snow and ice, those types of things. So, I approach it from multiple standpoints, from the fire department as a parent, and also from a DOT employee. You know, I think it's a road that really needs to be addressed, and be addressed sooner than later.
And it's really not the road itself. It's the surface and the amount of traffic that's on that road.
Well, it's a combination of everything. You know, I mean, it's a lack of experienced drivers. I mean, you know, I travel that road on a routine basis, and I haven't had an accident yet, but it doesn't mean it couldn't happen today. But we have inexperienced drivers that go too fast for the conditions, and, you know, the surface of the road certainly plays into that, and they lose control on the loose gravel. Or the washboards, because it's not graded and maintained as what it could be as far as a smooth surface for people to drive on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Tyler, I'm not sure how this last one is pronounced. Is it Hoke or? Okay, H-O. Hi. Your handwriting reminds me of Paul and Rick's.
Yeah, I practice.
Don't
practice
take that as a
school.
Compliment.
All right. Well, I'm here also representing Gilbert. I'm on the school board. I appreciate your attention on this. Just to emphasize right where Art left off, we look at it as a safety issue, plain and simple. A couple of things that just information that has changed even since, I think this came up in April. I was looking through on the website. That's when the five-year program was updated. The construction of our high school has advanced, and there was one benefit from a drought, and that is our construction project is ahead of time. We will be moving into that school in August of next year. That school will be a high school with over 400 students and all of their cars. It's estimated that around a third of the students come from the south, from the Ames area. So there's a tremendous amount of traffic. The other thing that we are currently pursuing at the board is an additional bond, which will be up for election in December. And if that bond passes, we're already working on athletic facility projects that we would also have ready for next fall. So it will be a full campus if we pursue with the successful passing of the bond with that much more traffic. So just that's new information since April. It's real. That facility is going to be there. The last thing I would mention is another project that will come with this additional bonding is additional parking on the south side of that high school, another 150 parking spots, and more importantly, another entrance onto Gretton, which becomes Grant, that will connect into Prairie View on the south side. So it will even further encourage connection back to the south side of Gilbert. So it's a real issue. We know that you've got a lot that you've got to balance here, but we would just ask that you put that very high on your priority list.
Thank you. Gentlemen, a question that's not come up, but it always eventually comes up, that when you pave a road that is a connecting link between a residential area and a school, and you're talking safety, you've got to also think about bicycles. And if we apply the same principle that we applied here on Country Club Road in Nevada, we've had citizens step up to the plate and do some fundraising and come up with a part of that fee to cover if you're talking about adding bike lanes. And it would make sense if you wanted to do something like that to do it, and we approved it, would be to do it all at the same time rather than having to come back a little bit later. But for me, I think we've already established a pattern for the one community in one road. So if bike lanes is something that you and the community and the residents of the two jurisdictions, even though they're in the same school district, feel is important, you may want to think about how can you assist in the additional dollars that it would take to complete that portion. And I haven't mentioned it to either one of them, but I do think that's something that we have to look at as supervisors. If we've kind of gone down that path with another project, that we treat, you know, others similar if it comes to adding bike lanes. So just the FYI. And it'll give you something to talk about when you're meeting not only with your school board, but the residents of your school district as well.
Okay. That would be good to follow up on. And I know that previously there's been interest in the Safe Routes to School,
right,
some grant money,
right,
and there was a group that was working on that. I would have to go back to know where.
Right, and I'm not sure where that was, where that's at either, too, because I do know a few years ago a report came to SERPA regarding adding bike lanes and walking trails and so forth, but I don't think that went anywhere at that time because there was at least one house, one owner of property that just did not want to, you know, sell their property or what have you. So I think the report is probably still there, and I think Amy Williams, I believe, has that from conservation.
Just to clarify, the precedent that you were referring to, the county paved and there was some additional fundraising for the bike trail portion of the paving, or what was the precedent?
Country Club Road, south of Nevada here, it's a $460,000 project, all said and done, and the way it is ending up, the county is going to fund $200,000 of that $460,000. The city of Nevada is going to fund about $50,000 of it, and the rest of it is coming in the form of grants and private fundraising. So that's the way that project came together.
$110,000 in grants and fundraising.
For me, Art, the information that you brought us, that this is the first time I've heard that. To me, If we have documentation that we have one of the more dangerous gravel roads in the state of Iowa, to me, there's some impetus there. That's the information that I would encourage you to get to us as quick as possible. And then we need to get this on an agenda where we can truly come forward and consider something. But that's the information that was most intriguing to me. While I appreciate what everybody else has brought us, it is something that has been at the top of our mind, and it's just a question of how it fits together with everything that's going on with Ames, how it fits together in the budgeting process that I'm sure you can all appreciate, and where it fits on that priority list in that 5-year plan. Okay? Thank you.
Thank
let
you.
Us know if you need more information.
Absolutely. Will do. Thank you. Okay. Okay, let's see. I'll turn back to the page. Okay, announcements from the supervisor.
Pass.
At this time, board, we have item number 16, a request from the county attorney to consider going into closed session pending litigation with the city of Huxley. I would like to call to your attention that under the Iowa Open Meetings Law, there is a code section chapter 21.5, subsection C, says that the board may go into closed session to discuss strategy with counsel in matters that are presently in litigation or where litigation is imminent, where its disclosure would be likely to prejudice or disadvantage the position of the government body in that litigation. Before I just ask the county attorney for any other comment regarding that, it would be my understanding that we would have to have a formal vote to go into closed session, and then we would have to stop and clear the room, and at that time a tape recording and a new clerk would be put in place and so forth. So a question or comment either from Jessica or County Attorney Steve Holmes prior to any action by the board, is there anything necessary at this time?
Just for the record, the county attorney's office would request a closed session pursuant to Iowa Code Section 21.5, sub 1, sub C. This is regarding current litigation that has been filed against the county in City of Huxley versus Story County, Iowa, number EQCV047252. It is the opinion of our office as your counsel that disclosure of the information that we'd like to talk about would be detrimental to the government body that we represent you, and that we would request that we be allowed to discuss legal strategy in this case with you in closed session.
Okay. Thank you. Well, let's take just a moment or two. We do have to kind of change over.
Well, we don't have,
we'll have to make
the
motion during this session. We'll have to make... So we'd have to have a motion.
I move based on the recommendation of civil attorney Reynolds that we go into closed session.
Second.
It's been moved and second that we go into closed session based on the recommendation from the county attorney's office. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye. Roll call. Okay, Sanders.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Clinton, aye. Closed session will stop and... prepare for that, and Auditor Lucy Martin will take over as recording for that in just a moment.
I moved it.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to move that we reconvene our open session on November 6th.
Second.
Been moved in second that we reconvene into open session on this Tuesday, November 6th, 2011. Sanders, roll call.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Clinton, aye. We are now back into open session. And at this time, the purpose here in open session and board is for us to determine what action that we would like to bring forth based upon the discussion in closed session.
Yeah, I would move that we request that our county attorney send a second demand for coverage to ICAP in the matter regarding Huxley.
Second.
Been moved in second that we empower the county attorney to send a notice of second demand to ICAP for legal representation in the matter regarding Huxley. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none. Sanders?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. That item is adopted. Okay, second item.
I move that we empower the county attorney to hire outside counsel to represent Story County in this matter.
Act on your behalf.
Act on our behalf to hire outside counsel in this matter.
Second.
It's been moved and second to empower the county attorney to hire outside counsel to act on our behalf in this matter. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, again, roll call. Sanders?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Clinton, aye. Motion is adopted. Okay. Any other action that needs to take place at this time?
Move adjournment.
Second.
Been moved and second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Okay, we'll...